Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Derek.
And I'm Ray.
I'm Alex Reed.
Welcome back to another episode of
Mostly Mixed.
Do you think, asks my brother, hands on little hips, that Mum doesn't love us enough, and that's why we have to live with Grandma and Grandad? We are going door to door, collecting for worldwide Advent missions, selling images of thin, smiling African children to the families in the neighbourhood. My grandparents in the church are behind this. We are head to toe in matching denim shirt and jean sets. I nod my head. I think she loves us a bit, but not as much as other people's mums. Is it because we're black? Grandad says that the world hates black people. No, because the people at church are brown and all of them are with their mums, and Mum is brown too. Grandad says that we're black, not brown. Coal is black. Night and evil things are black. Brown sounds nicer. Say brown, okay? Okay. A teenager with deep set eyes and a shaved head opens the door and yells at whoever is in there that there are two gollies on the doorstep before pounding up the stairs. The next thing we know, the parents are staring down at us. In his sweet little voice, my brother launches into a perfectly rehearsed, "We're collecting for Adventist Trust. Would you like a postcard or a fridge magnet?" Their faces relax a little and they shake their heads no, but they give us 50 pence each anyway. The lady is clutching a gold cross on a pendant around her stringy neck. They ask us if the children on the leaflets are people we know, and we lie and say yes, they're all our cousins. They ask us whereabouts in Africa we're from, but my brother doesn't know, and I guess at Nigeria, but I'm not sure if I said it right. We don't look like the children in the pictures, but the couple don't seem to notice. The couple tell us our English is very good, and say they feel so very sorry for the third world and all of its problems. "It's because your leaders are corrupt," the man says. "They just won't govern themselves correctly. They want all the money and power for themselves, and they don't give a toss about you people. Shame." We say thanks for the coins, and when they shut the door, I'm feeling dark red things, and I don't know why. I spin around to my brother and tell him that Mum is destined to go to hell, straight to hell, because she is a Jezebel who had children without being married, and neither one of us knows our fathers, and that she's also a gambler because she goes to bingo and plays the national lottery, which is a massive sin. I am angry with Mum a lot these days because we love her so much and we never ever see her. On Sundays, my brother and I stare out of the window, counting every white car that goes by, all the while hoping that she'll come and pick us up and take us home to stay. This evening, we make £12 from the people in our area, the best day yet. Even better, we get home and Mum is there. There are tight knots in my tummy. There is wind in my body whistling through the loops and twists. I can hear it. I want to seem mature and not too excited to see her standing here, but it's difficult. Difficult because she always feels like a dream. I inhale. I blow out. I squeeze my buttocks together to stop the air escaping. She looks, she looks a superstar, brilliant. Her hair is shiny past her shoulders and she smells like strawberries. She's brought us a tub of Neapolitan ice cream to share. She spooned it out into two of the yellow bowls for us and her nails are shiny and red. Grandma is hanging around with an odd expression on her face and says, "Ice cream later, Marcia. Explain the thing to the child now." Mum takes me upstairs to my room. My brother has to go and let Grandma bathe him because it's almost dinner time. "What is a golly?" he's asking her as they disappear into the bathroom. Mum says, "Get on the bed, sweetheart." She said she has something to tell me, something important. And so I'm thinking, I should never have thought or said those things about Mum. We must be going back to live with her. Maybe she loves us lots and lots and lots and we just didn't know it. My stomach is flipping out by now. The wind in me is sighing and rumbling around my hip area, wanting so much to escape. There are moths in my belly, pretty pink moths, darkening. When will she leave? Will it be soon? I hope not. Marcia says I need to listen carefully, but I do not make it onto my high bed until she lets it drop. "Your dad is dead," she says. "Liver failure. Drank himself to death." She takes a spoonful of ice cream from my bowl. "I so wanted him to meet his little girl. He would have loved you." She bites at the scoop with her beautiful teeth, and all I can think is beauty makes everything bearable.
Welcome to Mostly Lit, guys. Today we're joined by the amazing writer, poet, performer, Yasa Daly Ward, and that was a reading from her new memoir, The Terrible. Welcome, Yasa.
Oh, thank you. So good to be here, finally.
That was beautiful.
Oh, that was amazing. You. It's so surreal, like, having you, like, in the vicinity.
For real?
I've read the book, like, 3-4 times.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so I read it in March, and then I read it in April, twice, then I read it in May.
That is surreal. That's surreal for me to hear,
actually. It was
actually.
Your spring.
Really?
But yeah.
I read it today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's fresh God. In my mind.
How long did it take you to read it?
I started at 6. Yeah, started at 6.
Okay. Because it's a quick read, I think.
It is, but yeah. I mean, yeah, but you chew on certain passages as well, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, it is quite a quick read.
Yeah, it's quite a good read. So it's an all-consuming read as well. But how is everybody this week?
Yeah,
welcome
to
another episode of Mostly Lit,
start
actually.
Waxing lyrical about the book.
Welcome back to another episode of Mostly Lit, guys. How's everybody's week been?
Oh, mine's a bit of a... I was saying before, it's a bit surreal because I'm in the middle of a tour. And this jet lag like, has been... like lingering for 3 weeks because I've been in a million different places, so everything feels like really strange and surreal and dreamlike, but I'm enjoying that. You know, I'll be back, like I'll soon be back in New York in like 3 days, so everything's just but I like that. It's different, isn't it?
Yeah. Like no time's the same, really, is it? It's just bouncing back and forth.
Yeah.
What about you, Alex? How you been?
I'm good, man. I've had a pretty good week. We did Barely It.
With Kayo Chingoni.
Yeah, Kayo Chingoni. A week ago today, wasn't it?
Do you not do nothing? Do you not do anything in your week, Alex?
No.
You never have anything to say?
I never have anything. Because, like, what am I... apart from saying... Cause I don't... thing is, like, when you go, what are we doing each week? Derek would be like, you know, I've been working, having this, that, and the other. And I'm like, it's obvious...
But obviously, I have no life, but you're like, you're a socialite.
Huh?
Like, you.
Is he a socialite?
Alex is a socialite.
Oh, no, we went to Emma Gannon's book launch. That was amazing. You had to meet Emma Gannon.
Oh, yeah, that was good, yeah.
The multi-hyphenate method. That was good. But I had a really slow and quiet week this week, which I needed.
Yeah.
I needed. That's all.
Same with me, just work. Haven't done much, actually. Going to a couple events this week, so that should be fun.
That
so I have something to talk about next week when we come to record.
Finally.
But other than that, just trying to read, like, you know, I've started, so I'm giving away all my books. I'm trying to pick out 100 that I want to read for the rest of my life and just keep them.
Yeah. What do you mean?
Yes, so, this is what he does, yes,
sir. I've got so many books and I just thought I need to get rid of these books.
Why though? I don't.
One is taking up space. Two, I just realized that I'm keeping these books for like vanity's sake.
Oh yeah, so that you can be like,
look at all of my
books. Yeah.
And it's almost like I'm collecting my thoughts. So I feel like once I read a book, I acquire certain level of information in my head. If I throw the book away, then somehow it disappears, which is ridiculous. So I just thought, okay, let's get rid of the books. Let's keep 100 of my favorites that I would just love to read over and over again.
Yeah.
And that. So yeah, just slowly picking out ones that, putting them on top. Like, yeah, I want to read that. I'll read this for the rest of my life. Blah, blah, blah.
That sounds like a bit of a commitment. Like, at least the 100 that I'm going to read for the rest of my life, like over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, it does. But then there's some books that I just know I'm never going to get bored of. They might fall out of favor with me, but I know they'll fall back in at some point.
You just want to have them.
Exactly. Like, I'll never not want to read Invisible Man. I know that for a fact. I'll never not want to read Gold Tail on the Mount. I know that for a fact. Or The Unbearable Lightness of Being. I'll never not want to read those books. They were the first books that I picked out. And obviously The Great Gatsby and those other books. But
it's that's true, I think.
Slow process wise.
Low key, I might do that as well, actually. Look at the books that I want to keep. But I don't know, man. There's so many books on my shelves that I haven't read yet. So I've got a whole pile at the bottom.
And that's a problem because you're never going to read them, bro. We say we will, but
then I'll read them.
You'll get through it.
You know, I started collecting a few books of mine actually to sell and put back out there, like a car boot sale or something.
You're not going to get much for them. You can only sell them for like £2.
Yeah, that's what I would sell them for.
Why don't you just like, you could just like leave them in random places.
I think I'm going to start doing that as well. Yeah. I had an idea to like get some of my books and just put them, leave them on the tube.
Yeah.
And whoever picks them up in the park.
It's
sunny now, so people will just see a book and pick it up. Because I've seen people, there was this whole initiative for the tube that they put.
It's still there.
It's still there, yeah. So I remember like finding books on the tube. Like,
oh, yeah, they call it book crossing. Yeah, that's you just it. Say it, yeah.
Yeah, so I might do that actually.
I like the idea of that, but I would like to know who's picked up my book, how long they've had it for, and where they put it back.
What? It sounds very involved.
Yeah, exactly.
You haven't quite let go of the book.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. So, yeah.
Let go of the book.
But yeah, some stations have like bookshelves and you can just pick books up and stuff.
Yeah, I know they have that in North London and places.
I live in Brooklyn, and so like I always, when I'm walking in certain neighborhoods, I see like you just leave your books out on the pavement for whoever wants to read them to, you know, wants the book to kind of, you know, adopt that book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you'll go, so it'll be like Sunday morning, you'll walk around the corner and you'll like see a whole lot of books so you can just take them home. I like that.
Oh, that's interesting. I've never come across that in the UK before.
Yeah, they need to do it.
They're too conservative here for some reason.
I was going through a little crisis. I think it was a crisis. And I thought, I want to get rid of all my books. How can I do this the fastest way? I thought, I'm not driving them all the way to like a charity shop because I couldn't be bothered. So what I did was, I got like 50. I picked up one of those, you know, like those blue chairs that you find in like hall parties and stuff, in community centres. So I put that outside. I had a couple of those in my back garden. Put it in front of my house. Put like loads of books on it. And I thought, okay, people are going to come and do this. So I thought, I'll come back in an hour and I'll see which books people have taken. Fam, I came back out, the books are gone, the fucking chair's gone as well.
Oh my god.
Someone probably just lifted up the chair and took everything. I was like, wow, is that what they're really on around here?
They were hard up.
Like, took the chair they took as well.
The chair to sit on it to read it as well.
Yeah, but anyway, what's everybody reading?
I'm reading Difficult Women by Roxane Gay. And it's my it's been my plain companion. And I love short stories as well because, I don't know, I feel like my attention span is just not, you know, it's just really waning. It's not as strong as it was, which is, it's like really disappointing.
Yeah.
I'm trying to like get it back. I'm trying to do various exercises to get it back. But while I've got my short attention span, this is perfect because you get that like instant gratification of like the beginning, middle and the end.
Yeah,
you know?
It's like a nice chunk of stuff that you need at that moment. And then that's all you kind of get.
Yeah, and I like the way she gets to the heart of things and she writes a lot about gritty and difficult subjects.
Definitely.
Which, you know.
Which is your favourite story in there?
I Am a Knife. No, there were so many. That's hard. That's hard for me. There's one called I Am a Knife. She repeats that a lot through it. I think it's called that. There's so many.
Have you got to the the leaking one, where everywhere she goes is like a leak.
Yes, the water one. The water follows her everywhere.
Yeah.
I love that, though.
I love it, too. And I was kind of like, we had a big discussion about it. What does the water signify? I was like, oh, it signifies menstruation, right? That's what I thought.
Oh, goodness.
But then I saw an interview with Roxane Gay after my friend pointed out. She was just like, I had a leak in my roof one day and I wanted to write about it. But obviously, don't believe a writer when they say that. But
yeah, like, maybe something subconscious that, like, I thought about weight and, like, you know, the like heaviness, or, you know, like a, you know, like in the same way that like kind of depression can follow you, or like something otherworldly can settle on you and you can't, you know, get rid of it. That's what I thought. But obviously, she just had a leak.
So. Yeah, that's all she says.
That was a strange story.
Yeah.
That was a strange story.
What are you reading, Alex?
I'm reading Roxane Gay, but I'm reading, she's republished a short story collection called Haiti, which is based around her Haitian heritage. And she just kind of, a lot of the stories are about that, about being Haitian in Haiti, being Haitian in New York and whatnot, and just various places across the US. And she just writes so well. The way she just captures you and just drags you into this story. There was so many, like, she there was another, there was one that she was writing about, like, having, like, doing voodoo on a crush, like when the characters did the voodoo on the crush when she was down in Haiti. And it was like, it was amazing. And I felt like, oh, when could this story end? It's really encapsulated in her storytelling. And then when it got to the end, I was like, oh. Some of them are like a page and a half long. Some of them are like 6-7 pages long. So you just varied, like you're just kind of up and down with like the tempo of the collection.
Love that.
Yeah, it was really good. What about you? What are you reading?
I'm rereading Waiting for Godot.
Oh.
By Samuel Beckett.
Yes.
I don't know. Obviously, my mood always dictates what I read. And I was just in some strange mood, so I just picked that up and... I was reading a small like biography of his, and it was basically saying how the reason why he was so like nihilistic in a way, and the way why he was so obsessed with absurdity was because he had a real tough life, and he was sick from like childhood all through his life and stuff, and he had all of these issues, and they were basically just like, so obviously that coloured his world of view and whatnot, blah blah blah. And then I was just kind of thinking, well, what about people who haven't gone through that, and that is still their worldview? Do you know what I mean? So yeah, I picked up Waiting for Godot, started reading that. Still don't 100% understand it, because he's adamant that he's not talking about God. He's like, if I wanted to write about God, I'd write about God. But, and again, you can't trust the writer to explain their work to you. But
you can't talk about it now.
But yeah, so that's what I'm reading.
Oh, okay.
Waiting for Godot.
Righty-o. So we're going to get into the nitty gritty of the terrible, aren't we, Lisa?
Well, yes. I mean, where do you start? There's a lot of
grit. Where do you start?
There's a lot of grit.
Oh, man. This book was encapsulating.
I started at the beginning, you know.
I mean, with the terrible, was this something that when you started your writing career, you always planned to write eventually?
No, absolutely not. I didn't want to write a memoir. I would never... I'm not really, like, somebody who, first of all... likes talking about themselves, and this has been interesting because it's kind of all I'm doing on this tour, which is like I've had to learn to be like really uncomfortable and still carry on. I wouldn't, because I'm like a private person actually, so it's weird that it happened. But then with Bone, the first book, which is like a collection of poems, I came across this agent that I really wanted. Like, I've been writing things for years and like submitting them, and of course, like, it wasn't good enough, you know, as a kid. And then this agent came along, and who I really, really wanted. And so she was like, do you have anything else? And I didn't have anything. But I was like, of course. You know, I did what anyone would do and just lied. Yeah, of course. Then she was like, well, can you send it? And I was like, oh, God, like, what am I going to... So I just quickly like wrote like 30 pages of what I thought would be like a fictional, you know, piece about like children and magic and like, you know, how we can like see into other dimensions sometimes when really difficult things are happening at home. And then I realized that everything I'd written was true, but I sent it anyway. I just thought, well, this is the chance to speak to that agent. And then she really liked it. And then I had to continue because I was like, well, it looks like I'm writing a memoir. But yeah, I would never have like chosen to do that. It's been an interesting process.
So you fully fell into it?
Fell.
You threw yourself by
mistake. Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, those are things in there that, like, are things that I never thought I would tell another living person. Like, very, like, personal to me. And, Well, it's just one of those things. It's just there now. Mm. You know.
Well, thank you. First of all.
So what was the hardest thing to write in there?
Oh, a lot of just things that can be judged. You know, things about drugs, things about sex and sexuality. You know. And also a lot of things about race, you know, even though we talk about it now, they're no longer like non-topical subjects. Yeah. But, you know, we all have different ways in which we express, and I'm not like a huge talker. So that I didn't expect to come out with all of that stuff. But when you write about a life, you write about issues and you write about difficult aspects as well.
So there wasn't one thing that you like you put pen to paper, obviously, so to speak, and you thought, I don't know if I can put this in here.
There was never, I don't know if I can put this in here, because a thing that happens almost subconsciously when you're writing a memoir is if you start doing that and excavating the difficulty from it, then you automatically, by omission, you're kind of not really doing it. And you've got to do things from the heart, with your guts, and you've got to, otherwise what's the point? You know, I just write about other people, I'll just write about other difficult things that aren't quite me. But if I'm going to decide to do that, then that's what it's got to be. Mm. And that means scaring myself as well, you know, that's part of it, you know, it's important in art to you've got to stretch yourself.
Yeah, be honest too.
Yeah.
All right. So let's start at the beginning then. The heavy Christian influence there. How did you navigate that? Because that was really intense. Because I'm not Seventh Day Adventist. Growing up, I wasn't Seventh Day Adventist, so it wasn't something that I knew existed, quote unquote, until I was 18 or whatnot. But what was I know you've mentioned it in the book, but what was that like growing up in that? And do you have a relationship with God? Are you...
Absolutely. Well, the thing you got to remember as well is that when you grow up in a religious sect or religious fundamentalism, you don't know anything else. So my grandparents represented that, and they were who I lived with. And so I know my Bible inside out still. And you just, you learn, you garner a sense of morality that is really specific. And you are taught things in a certain way, and that was what I came up believing, because I went to go and live with my grandparents at age 6 and going on 7, so all of that early teachings were there. And it was very different. I lived in a poor white working class environment at Chorley in the northwest of England, and so it was really, really interesting to see your friends home life in stark contrast to yours. Everything to what they eat, to what they're allowed to do, to how they're allowed to speak, I don't know if people know about a Seventh-day Adventist religion, but from sunset on the Friday to sunset on the Saturday is the Sabbath. So there's no undertaking of anything secular, no talking about anything that's not holy, no TV, no singing anything that isn't holy. It's very strict. And then we have all the foods that we eat and don't, and all the drinks that we do drink and don't, it's fairly strict.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I found quite funny actually is that obviously when observing the Sabbath or, the SDA life, your granddad was still very, very vain.
Yeah.
And he kind of do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of oh, but this is fine though. Do you know what I mean? Don't worry about this, it's fine. Do you know what I mean? And it's everybody has a way of kind of, making a few cracks in the religion to get away with the things that they're really passionate about. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I just thought that was hilarious. I thought, I've been there. Yeah. I'll be like, oh, God's fine with it. He's all right with it. You won't mind. Do you know what I mean?
You know, it's funny though, because I was talking to my friend the other day, and he's like, one pair of grandparents were SDA. So he knew that on Friday, when he went to them on the weekend, it was Friday and then sunset until Saturday sunset, it was just nothing. So he would go and he'd either just read or play Lego or whatever. And then he was the other side of grandparents were Catholic. So then he would actually leave them on a Saturday and go to Catholic church on a Sunday. Oh, wow. I was wow, I did not know this. I did not know this. And then but then it was that whole thing about growing older. And then once you grow older, you can start to dictate a bit more about where you go and how you do it. Because I used to always go to church with my nan. when I was up in Leicester, when where she is, and then and even back here, I used to always go on a Sunday morning. But then as I grew older, it was that kind of, well, I don't want to go today kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, well, how was that feeling for you? What were you guys, both of you?
No, do you know what? I never did it. I've never looked at it. I wouldn't even do it today. My grandparents are still living. And I wouldn't even do it today and say, I don't want to go. For me, that still feels really taboo. I just gradually went to live with my mums and then just, like, didn't come, you know? But it was not, yeah, I could never have done that.
Yeah.
Just like what they instilled in me. It was so strict. And also, I wouldn't want to hurt their feelings. For them, that's everything, you know? And it's like, what do you mean you don't want to go? Like, this is going to save your life, you know?
Yeah.
Eternal fires of damnation, you know what I mean?
You know what, there's a lot of like dreamlike moments in the book. Like, there's the part when you're talking about, you know, the Manchester drug scene, you're out raving and all of that, and when I was reading that, it kind of reminded me of, you know, Lights Are Blinding My Eyes by The Streets, that song.
Yeah.
That really comes to mind when I'm reading that section. So I wanted to ask, because that state is kind of evoked in the book, was there anything you wrote and read afterwards and be like, am I remembering this right? Did this actually happen?
No, I remember everything. I think one of the things about being a writer is you do have a clear sense memory, you know. So I remember those things, and also because of the altered state I was in, it's very easy for me to kind of because of, you know, those feelings of like euphoria and dreaming. I'm a dreamy person anyway, so it's easy for me to go, that's what that felt like then. Yes.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, why are you laughing, Alex?
No, okay, I just find it so bizarre. But
what do you find bizarre?
I saw it when I was reading it. I read it all, and I was thinking of like just this. I want to say amazing, colorful life that you had, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, when you wisp into this whole dreamlike phase of like the drug scene in Manchester, and then going down to London, and then your various relationships. It was just so like, oh my god, like, what would it look like if I was to write like my life kind of into somebody else? You know what I mean?
There's
that level of vulnerability that you've kind of said, all right, you want to know about me, here's it in this book. And
do you not feel like your life would be as interesting or something?
I don't know. That's the thing. Like, that's the thing. You kind of write these things and then you said, oh, this is what I went through. For you, this is your whole world.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? When I read it, I was like, yep, I get that with the religious grandparents. Yep, I get that with the parents. Yep, I get that with the siblings kind of thing. So you like, it's just so weird that when we live in our worlds, we don't know who it's going to be so similar to. And then you realise how similar your worlds are.
Yeah.
And that's what I find, that's why I was laughing. I was like, that's just what I find so bizarre. Because it's just so strange.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I mean, there was lots of bits in the book where that didn't affect my immediate reality, but I could still kind of relate in some way, shape or form. Do you know what I mean? Where I could be like, okay, I know somebody like that, or I've seen something like that, or just something even little, like when you were on the bus and you're going from Deansgate up to Manchester Piccadilly, Victoria, I was kind of like, oh, I've been on that bus and I've been up there. Do you know what I mean? And that small part of relating makes the book come alive too. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, I mean, the honesty is so, it's weird.
It's commendable.
It's very memorable, and it's kind of like, you know, sometimes you think things and you're just like, boy, if anybody got inside my head and knew the things that I think, they'll think I'm some. But it's like you've really put everything in there to the point where some bits are really uncomfortable to read. Do you know
good.
What I mean? That's what you wanted.
Well, no. I didn't have, you have to get out of the way when you're writing. So I didn't have any agendas. I was just writing what it is. But like, in retrospect, I'm always like, yeah, good. Because it's gritty, you know, and some of it's like a bit, you know, on reading it back, because, you know, we're always changing. And so I'm not the person I was like even 2 years ago. You know, I gained more. I got richer. And I look at it, I'm like, did that really happen like that? Yeah, it did. I can't believe I'm like still standing here and like in a completely different frame of mind. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's a beautiful thing about life, though, isn't it? It goes on.
You're never stuck in the present, in the situation that you're always going to be in. Do you see what I mean?
Like,
you don't. You may have a tough month or whatever, but you know, once you kind of get out of that month, and you look back on it, you're like, oh, I actually went through that.
Yeah, I got through it.
And it felt longer than it actually was.
Yeah.
It always feels like everybody says, oh, you'll get through it, and you're just looking at them like, I don't think so.
Exactly, and then later on, you're like, rah, actually. Wow.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's actually mad.
Yeah, I guess. I just want to quickly move on to like sexuality and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, reading the book, like the one of the first sexual experiences you have was with your friend, your female friend. I wanted to ask afterwards, like during your life, did you ever feel like heterosexuality was forced upon you?
No, never.
No.
But that's because I've never. I haven't really accepted like certain levels of conditioning. I mean, I know some of it is filtered through. We all have conditioning, but not really, because I knew from quite early on that I was going to do what I was going to do in the moment and do things with my my whole feel what I feel with my whole heart and whole self, and that feels to me like very much. I can't really speak so much for men and people who identify as men and boys, but I think it's kind of common. I think it's got like a common experience to kind of experiment in that way.
Mm.
But I could be wrong.
Oh, you mean when you're at that age?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're kind of right.
I think.
Yeah, I get.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
They're saying like there were some things not to put my brother on blast or anything, but when he was young,
you just
like,
came to
when he was like five and stuff, he was kind of fascinated by, you know, the human body and stuff. Do you know what I mean? So he'd want to know, oh, what's that or something? If he sees something, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so I do kind of understand, but it's because of the emotion that came afterwards of your experience. It wasn't just kind of like, oh, we did this and it was fascinating. It was kind of like, wow, I like, he was more than just the physical act. It was the actual person.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, a feeling of like togetherness and and certain aspects of love, which are present in friendship, which I've always been interested in kind of like thinking about, like speaking about, and describing.
How did that make you feel about relationships thereafter?
Which one? That particular early experience?
Yeah, I mean, like, so. Okay, so obviously, I want to say romantic relationships thereafter. Would you say that that kind of made you think, I'm literally just going to always, like, was there no level of shame? Because with men, it's like, they've got to deal with the shame and a lot of, like, pride that goes with it. The context is slightly different for women, but did you feel any of that?
Funnily enough, no. And I don't know if it's just something I was missing, but I always, as soon as I started to identify, you know, in that kind of romantic or romantic sexual or whatever, I've never made a distinction between who I love and whether that's, you know, right or correct. I like authenticity, and even growing up in that strict kind of like religious understanding, I still know just the importance. I think there may be an artist's importance in being strong in those really natural primal feelings and understanding. Like, okay, I feel like this about this person. Like, who am I to kind of question that the feeling is a feeling is a real thing, you know? So So yeah,
it's okay. Kind of like it is what it is.
Yeah, it yeah. really is what it is. Yeah, I don't want to close parts of me down, and of course that's the stuff that gets you into trouble as well.
Yeah.
You know, but don't you want to like live a life?
You have to live.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's one part in the. In the book where you talk about, you know, you wrote a book about four middle class white women and there was some white lesbianism in the book.
You're like,
do you still have that book?
It's called Swinging Roundabout. Yeah. Yes, it's in storage in LA.
Oh, wow.
But I remember it. It's probably in my old like Gmail files. Like, I remember it. Mm. It was a terrible novel. I sent it off to everybody. I wrote it when I was 18, and I sent it off to like all the literary agents in London. God. Of course, they rejected. They were all like, "It's not quite what we're looking for."
It's the passive aggressive emails.
That was interesting. It's like chick lit. Like, it's like really, really what you call chick lit. Like, it should have like pink. Like,
you think you're gonna push to get that published?
No, because it's
just something that you're gonna also, bury deep.
Do you know, I only have one black character in it, and she was like a side, like a friend, because it was what I was consuming. I didn't realize that like at that point, even at 18, which I guess I wish that I had known that then. I didn't realize that our stories. Were stories that would be published and like, you know, and I think I was still trying to cater to, you know, what I saw.
I mean, for example, was that something that you were concerned with then at that age? Like, were you kind of like, I want to read something where there's characters like me who look like me, innit?
It was all unconscious. It was all unconscious because I was on such a, and I was still in the northwest of England, and I was on such a diet of like very white literature. Like, I only came into the literature of my people late in life, actually. You know, I did. And then it all came at once, and I was like,
yeah,
it was
same,
fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then, so you're saying that like, you like writing about what you saw and stuff.
Yeah.
So with the, like you said, there was mild lesbianism. Were you around people who were dating other women?
No, it was just like complete fantasy. Fantasies. I was like, oh, imagine if this could be the case. I mean, it could have been, but you know, I was very curious and just wanting to know more about that.
I did that via fan fiction. Did you guys ever write fan fiction?
I never wrote that.
Nah, never.
There was this fanfiction.net was a crazy, crazy dark place. I don't know what happened.
Is that where 50 Shades came from?
I don't know.
Because it started with fan fiction, didn't it?
Something like that.
That's what I thought, yeah.
But there were some stories in there about Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings, and I was like, these people are really like trying to not PG these novels.
Mm.
But people use fan fiction to kind of create the fantasies and
do all of that. Of course.
So do you think it was kind of cathartic then for you to write about those women, the relationships that they were potentially having?
No, I think it was just fun. I was like, if only.
So you didn't think too much. You didn't think too much into it. It was I want to write this.
Yeah, I never do with writing because then you're in your own way, and then you're analysing and editing while you're doing it. And if you want to be wild in your writing and you want to be wide in your writing, you can't do that. You got to move and let the other thing come that's coming, because it's bigger than you. Actually, when you're writing, it's like, you know, whatever you believe, whether it's spirit or God or whatever, or inspiration, it's something that like has to come through you, and so you have to like gracefully just exit the moment. Yeah.
So because early on in the book, obviously, you know, you find out you know, father's Nigerian, we find out that, you know, he's died of liver failure.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that, has there ever been kind of a disjointedness between you and the Nigerian side of you?
Well, the disjointedness happened naturally because I didn't know it. Mm. So I didn't know, because all my family are West Indian, they're all Jamaican. So, like, that was the side. I've been to Jamaica lots, and, you know, that's the side I knew and understood. But as soon as I began to have Nigerian friends, and that, you know, you quickly got to understand my culture actually through them. Because my mum couldn't tell me, you know, because she's Jamaican. And, you know, their affair, their relationship was a brief one. But, no, it was something that I was wanted, you know, and something I still can't wait to experience even deeper. Because I got my brothers and sisters in Nigeria who I write to and stuff.
Okay.
We haven't met yet though. We're gonna meet like next year. Like, it's gonna be.
Have you been yet? Been to Nigeria?
No. Ooh. I'm going next year.
Okay, so which part of Nigeria?
Oh, Jos. Yeah, Jos. We're in the northern.
Is that Hausa?
You're asking me like I'm Nigerian.
I'm asking you because, man, you're from the continent.
They speak Hausa.
Hausa. Yeah.
But the tribe is called Mupung, which is like a small tribe. We have a very specific language as well.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
So I did my 23andMe. And I'm like 93.1% West African, 6.5% European, and then so I'm just,
you can't trust those things though.
I'm mulling. Why can't you trust them?
I don't think you trust them because they have to assume things about you before they do the test.
What do you mean?
You don't type in anything, but
so you didn't have to give them any information about yourself.
Literally it was just your name, your email address.
Yep.
They send you the kit.
Mm-hmm.
You spit in the kit.
Yep.
You send it back.
You spit in it. Oh yeah, my you God, say you spit in it. Blood thing.
No.
That's so, what I thought as well.
No, you spit in it because they take it all through your saliva and all that stuff. But you don't. It's fasted, so you can't eat before, or else it damages the thing. But they don't take anything. You don't click. Oh, Afro Caribbean.
I know.
You know what I mean? Because that would just be like, well, they would make that easy for them. They take that and then they run with it. And then I was like, well, I'm gonna see whatever I get comes from it. Then I got it back and I was like, wow. So they just listed four countries from West Africa.
Where? Which ones?
It was Liberia, Cameroon, Ghana, Nigeria.
Liberia? Really?
Liberia, you know. This is what I mean. No, and Cape Verde, so five. So
Really interesting.
That was interesting. So I'm waiting back on the percentages for each, but overall that's the thing. And then obviously European was like Ireland, Scotland, and then there's a few from Scandinavia. I don't know about that.
God, I'd never do one of those tests.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Pay money for them to tell me I'm 100% African. It's just long. I can't be bothered. I already know I'm fully Ghanaian. Like, I don't need it. How much do you pay? Like, 150 quid?
I got mine in January sales, Derek. I have to make sure that I get, it discounted cheaper. But yeah, it was pretty cheap. It wasn't too bad, like 50 quid or something. Mm-hmm. And obviously, with the 23andMe, they tell you about, you're susceptible to Alzheimer's or all these different things, and the hereditary traits as well. But anyway, I say all that to say, you're from Nigeria.
Yeah. Yes, I certainly am.
I would love to go. Yeah, I'd love to go over and just have that, and like to know that you're from there is kind of a to be like we are home kind of thing.
Yeah. Did they feel like that when you went to South Africa?
Did I feel like
that? Yeah, did you feel like, oh, this is home? Did you feel like...
I knew I was aware I was on the continent, but there's so many, more... there's a lot of other things happening under the surface in South Africa, which is really palpable. And so I had an amazing time there. I didn't particularly feel like... If I think home away from home, it's in a different way, just that I was there for a long time and I really connected with the people there and started to really understand it. But no, not as my birthright place. Mm-hmm. It's quite different.
When you decided to go, mm-hmm. was it an easy decision to make? Because in the book, it's kind of like a jump.
Yeah, it was a jump.
Okay.
I had to do something else because I had quite crazy feelings of depression. And when I say crazy, I let me reiterate.
Yeah.
I actually mean in intense, strong, like very strong feelings of I've got to do something different to break this up. Yeah.
So did writing help? I mean, before you went to South Africa, I assume you was obviously still writing poetry.
It only really kicked off again when I was in South Africa. I had stopped. But yeah, it helped because... not the act of it, but just like maybe the moment of when you come to share it. That's what helped.
Right. Also, obviously performing kind of.
It really, really did. Performing just kind of like made it really, really apparent that that's what I wanted to do. And that's how I wanted to reach people. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't know before. And just feeling at sea is like one of the hardest things to feel.
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't it? It's just.
What were some of the defining moments? So. You know when people get so stuck in a routine, you feel like your life is a rut and you just continue doing stuff. You're just doing, but then you kind of break out of that. So obviously going to South Africa was probably that kind of, well, I'm going to go here.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Like, are there any other defining moments that you guys have had, both of you?
The defining moment was there when I was like, well, I have to go because, I can't stay here because I'm just not in the right mental state. My capacity feels inhibited. And so I went over there and that wasn't that easy either. There was lots of things happening. It was still all of that the troubled things that were like choking me and like appearing at various moments was still there, because it's going to be there wherever you, whatever your coordinates is, it's going to follow you, you know, unless you like dealt with it. So that was still happening. So I was like, God, am I ever going to feel good? You know, am I ever going to feel like life is like, is a light thing, is an easy thing, is a good place? And no, like I had to figure a lot of things out. And then I happened across this poetry night that used to happen like weekly, and they were like, can you write about like, you know, problems, discord in the family? And I said, yeah, I can definitely do that. And then I started to do that and started to go every Monday and do that. And just the fellowship and the people, and the South African poets are incredible. Like just the energy and like just, you know, it was just wonderful.
Yeah.
And then I started to like do it more and more and take it really seriously, like as an art form.
What are you doing?
Oh, I mean,
or do you want that to, or do you want to have a defining, do you want to do that?
Oh, is there a defining moment in my life?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm still waiting for it, bro. I'm still waiting. Yeah. I think it's, it will come eventually, hopefully. But as it stands, there hasn't really been anything. Or maybe, I mean, maybe 5 years from now, I'll look back and then recognize it, but obviously I can't recognize it right now. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, I mean, you know, in your book, there's this really amazing moment that gave me chills, where it's after Rue's been going through his stuff.
Yeah,
and then you're sitting in the, I think you're sitting in the car with him, or you're on the phone to him, and he's just like, you're kind of like, how you coping? And he's like, oh, you know, I'm doing music now. I'm doing this new thing called Grime.
Yeah, Grime.
I was like, as soon as you said that, I was like, yeah, Yersa gets it. Like, gets it. That was that's probably my favorite part of the whole thing.
I read that
thing
and I thought, Derek, wow.
Yeah, because this is how the Mandem were coping with things. They were making Grime music, do you know what I mean?
And he's like I love his, I love my brother's music. He sent me some stuff yesterday, actually. He's like, what do you think of this? But yeah, really, of course, I'm going to be biased, aren't I? But yeah, I love it.
Are you guys still close? Still very close?
Yeah, it's exactly as it, you know, I said in the book, you know, there might be long periods of time in which we don't speak, and then we do, and it's like we're close.
Yeah. I was going to ask, like, and but all of you, all three of you, what about your older brother?
My older brother, we have the massive chunks of time in which we don't speak. And we're all doing our separate things. And, you know, I think there's many reasons for that disjointedness as outlined in the book. But when we come together, it's lovely. My grandma was 90 last July. So we all went to that. It's like a little reunion.
I was going to ask about grief, but I wasn't going to ask about it in the roundabout way, but I forgot how I was going to ask it. But how did it help? How did it help you, like, push the, get the words out for it? Because it's a very difficult piece. It's very difficult to write about, I can imagine. You know,
it is. I think in any space like that, you just got to break it down and be as truthful as possible. And you can't identify with the trauma that's in your life or think that you're still there, you know, because I'm definitely not. I don't identify with, like, thoughts of, oh, God, this happened, it was so bad. No, I'm a different place, you know. So I think maybe it helps because I'm objectively looking at it. You know, I'm not looking at it from, like, a damaged or, like, a point of view where, you know, I'm still underneath it. You know, I'm really not. So I think that helps to have that perspective, that distance.
So do you think that if you weren't completely over the situations in the book, you wouldn't have been able to write about them?
It wouldn't be there yet. Everything happens exactly as it's supposed to happen. I'm supposed to do it now. Wouldn't have been able to write the book 5 years ago. It wouldn't be complete. You know, it's got to, it had to have happened now. And there's a reason. I think there's a reason for those experiences in the book so that the book could be here. And, like, you know, There's reasons beyond, I think, what we all know and understand. There's, like, some divine order or whatever.
Yeah.
And I just like, try to play my part in that, you know?
Cool. So now I wanted to ask the obvious question. What is the terrible?
The Terrible is a personification of a lot of different things. It is addiction, grief, loneliness, despair, anxiety, bereavement, depression. It is like all of those things. And the reason why I personified it was because it can become a thing that follows you. It can be you, you know. It can be. It can become a human-like, monster-like entity that you feel like you can't rid yourself of. And everybody, I feel, has their own version of their terrible. Do you know what I mean? So for me, it's one thing. For you, it's the other. And it's a thing that has to be, like, reckoned with and dealt with before you can, like, get on with the other things in your life, you know? And so, like, when I say the terrible as well, it's tongue-in-cheek, because actually the terrible has lots of beautiful qualities too. If the terrible did not have that, then I wouldn't get a novel out of it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I kind of, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's been difficult at times, but I'm happy that I had my version of it, and my version of it allowed me to tell a story, you know? Yeah.
Great.
And now we're going on to Mostly Flicks. So what did we pick this week? What did you pick this week, Yester?
I picked a film called Fish Tank.
Oh, God.
Yeah, Alex, you didn't like it. I could tell. You pursed your lips up. You were like, I thought I got the wrong film. Why didn't you like it?
I don't know what it was, but it felt like, not necessarily close to home, but I recognized a lot of people from school in that story. And so basically, growing up, like, the first few house parties I went to were in houses like Mia's and whatnot. And families like Mia's and whatnot.
Yeah.
And, like, I'll never forget, there was one house party and one guy and his mum was at the house, but we were all 15 and whatnot, and she was all like, shots, anybody, shots? And she was walking around with the apple sours. I'm like, this is so irresponsible, but I'm still going to be here. So that's kind of what it reminded me of. But then the story was interesting.
Mm.
And it was one of those stories that needed to be told from that perspective, because I think it's another, like, what's the word? Another segment of reality that people don't tend to acknowledge. Do you know what I mean? Unless it's in a soap, for example.
Yeah.
So I liked that element of it.
Mm.
But I kind of got to an hour and a half in and I was like, so this is a story about nothing really. I don't know. This is kind of what I felt. Like, God. I don't know.
Alice, man, what the fuck?
Help me.
It's about life, bro. Like, when I watched it, the thing is, I couldn't watch it comfortably, because I knew what was coming and I hate watching things like that. So I was kind of like, when is this going to happen? Like, can it just happen? You know? And then after it happened, I was kind of like, okay, now I can watch it. But one thing I did love is what?
Which we explain what the film is to people.
Right, we've really just gone in.
Yeah,
like,
we've really just gone into it.
Well, I mean, it's hard to... It's basically a film about young girl Mia.
Yeah.
She lives on a council estate.
Mm-hmm.
Been kicked out of school. She's about to start a unit.
Yeah.
Her mum's a party animal. Her mum doesn't respect her, doesn't like her clearly.
Yeah.
But obviously she still provides for her, still puts clothes on her back, still puts food in her mouth.
Yeah.
Does the bare minimum, basically. Mum has a boyfriend. I forget his name. I just see him as
Connor.
Connor the sleaze. Fucking sleaze, anyway.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's it. It's just basically a couple of days in her life and what it's like to be Mia, the things that happen, what goes on, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, I loved it, man. I thought to myself, I've had friends like that. I've still got friends like that. I always see people like that running up and down the street around my area, doing a madness, you know, trying to, you know, smash windows with spark plugs and all that kind of that crazy stuff. So yeah, Fassbender, he's such a great actor.
Oh yeah,
it's like I hated him in the movie. One, because I knew what he was gonna do, and he really tried to make it out as if to say, "Oh, I just really care about this kid. I really, you know, you can be a dancer, you can do whatever you like." And I'm just kind of like,
"Right,
you're disgusting, man."
Mm. Oh, interesting that you knew what was. Maybe I'm naive, oh God, and I don't think I am, but like. I didn't know, actually, what... you know, you get a glint in it. Maybe I just was wishful thinking. I just, like, oh, it's just hope for the best in people, even, you know, in a film. But I didn't know that that was going to happen.
Really?
In a film.
I think I'm just think too so. Cynical.
Yeah.
Just think, yeah,
people... You're also awful. A man, so, you know.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So, yeah.
It's kind of... There was just a tension there that was growing.
Yeah,
and
true.
Like, as soon as he came on the scene, I was like, oh, probably, maybe...
Yeah,
this might happen, sort of thing. Yeah. I don't know.
Do you know what I mean? And when it got to the end, it's so funny because when it got, I'm so used to watching like Nollywood movies, yeah, that when it got into the end, I was like, Ross, are white guys actually do this as well, where they've got a whole nother family?
Yeah.
And they're, do you know what I mean? Yeah. I was just like, wow.
Ross, are white guys do this as well?
Because I'm so programmed to watching these Nollywood movies where that's these kind of things. And obviously hearing my mom talking about stuff as well.
I'm back home.
But then also, when she obviously took Fassbender's daughter, I was so scared she was going to kill her.
I was like,
really?
I was like, please don't kill this little girl.
You think it would be that dark?
Probably.
Or by accident or something. Like when she dashed her into the water, I was like, that's it, it's done.
Yeah. Because I thought to myself, I actually thought to myself, like, what is she doing? Like, why is she taking this girl? Even when she pissed in the living room, I was a bit like, this is all a bit gross.
Really?
What's going on? I was just like,
it's trauma.
Yeah, I was just like, she must be so rattled right now.
Yeah.
That she's just like,
I was like,
yeah.
Oh my God. This is happening. But yeah, no, it was.
You live the show at life, Alex, if you think that's wild.
Oh my. No, it's not even that. I wasn't even expecting that to happen.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? Like, I was like, what is going on? She's out here in somebody else's house doing a madness.
It's not just someone else's house, though,
but it's, you know, she must have been really confused because it's someone, you know, when you that age, you're desperate for dad, you know, you're desperate for, and you're a girl as well, you're desperate for dad, and then dad becomes something else because it's confused, and then that happens, which makes it bonds them even further, and then she goes and finds out that's traumatic, man, you know, and because her mum's not, but she doesn't have anyone in her life really, like close to her, and her mum's not there, so.
Did you know anybody like this growing up?
That's an inverted story of the terrible, please. Yeah. Like, you know, I mean, I was brought up, you know, I had like a certain amount of like manners and gracefulness that you have to have because, you know, I'm black and you don't, I'm not running the streets, you know, being like, behaving like her. But I understood the things about it, you know, the partying, the, you know, the need to escape. And so maybe that's why I love it so much. And I also love the direction of it. I love Andrea Arnold as a director.
Definitely,
the way,
it was brilliant.
Yeah, like the sound, like when she's like doing that ridiculous like dancing, and it's just like, you know, that shot where she's just on her own in that like council estate place.
I really loved it. And I think one thing I really didn't expect either is when she got to the dance audition and it was a strip club.
Yeah,
I wasn't expecting that.
Oh god,
I was kind of just like, oh wow, okay, so this is what,
yeah,
do you know what I mean,
sad, yeah.
But yeah, you're right, the sounds and everything was just like I was saying to you earlier, that after I watched the movie and I went downstairs, started making food and walking around to the shop, I thought to myself, am I imitating this movie, or is this movie just really captured life so perfectly that I feel like, do you know what I mean?
Did you not find it nostalgic music wise?
I love the music. Oh my god, the ending with "Life's a Bitch" by Nas. I thought I was sick. I thought I was sick.
When they were all dead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I loved it. I thought, wow, okay, this is cool. And there was a lot of hip hop in
Like that was the music of the time, like of the 2009. So we had the Cassie, we had the Ashanti,
especially,
we had all of this stuff.
Yeah, especially for someone, for them, because you know, like that for that demographic, they're like emulating black culture a lot, you know what I mean, and so they love the music like that.
But there was only one black person in there, and it was just like a glimpse.
Yeah, like you,
yeah, but look at where it is
exactly,
as well, you know what I mean.
Where was it?
I don't know.
I thought Essex, but then I didn't think.
No, it wasn't. Oh, I can't remember, like, but I had
Tilbury. But where's that?
I have no idea. You know the main actress in that movie, they found her on the street. Basically, this
Andrea Arnold always does this. Yeah. She did this with American Honey. They came out as well.
All right.
Yeah.
It was so she was like, they saw this girl arguing with her boyfriend on the high road, and then she had no acting experience before, and they just cast her.
She's in EastEnders now.
Is it?
Oh. Yeah. She's one of the Slaters.
Oh. I didn't know. I don't watch EastEnders anymore.
Hayley Slater.
You still watch EastEnders?
No, I went on IMDb, Darren. But yes, I do watch EastEnders sometimes.
Do you?
I'm not about to be judged.
No, I would never.
I'm not about to be dragged through the mud on my own show, all right?
I judge not.
No, because like, my parents watch it from time to time.
Yeah.
Do you get EastEnders in New York? Is there like a channel you can watch?
No.
Wow.
Maybe they do. I do not get. No. I don't have a television.
That's good.
Okay.
I haven't had one for years.
Is that peaceful? That must be peaceful.
Yeah, like this. Like my apartment is like the quietest place on earth.
See, peace. That's yeah. kind of what, that's what I want. I don't think I'd have a TV in my apartment if I was to have an apartment.
No, I'm a real, I like aloneness and silence. That's, yeah. that's like my, the best therapy for me.
The yeah. poet's life.
Yeah.
Is it all
the
white?
The writer's life. It is all white, but that wasn't my choice. It was like that when I moved in.
All right.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. So that's Multiflix, and that was
Fish Tank 2009. Is that what it's
called? Yeah, 2009.
Yeah, is that the full title, or is it just called Fish Tank?
No, it's called Fish Tank, but it came out in 2009.
Yeah, so Fish Tank.
Yeah.
All right. Right. Where can they find you? Yes, sir.
Oh, goodness. So if you want to find me in real life, oh, that sounds a bit. I'm going to be like in London. So I'm in London. On Monday at this thing called it's 5x15 and it's a seat at the table at Conway Hall.
Oh yeah,
how's that with the pool?
Yeah, yeah, the pool. There's lots of people. There's like, I'm not gonna say everyone's names because I'm scared that I'll get them wrong. But there's like five speakers and they're incredible. Yeah. Mm. You know, like Yummy's evening. Yummy. She's great. And on Tuesday, a place called Second Home, and I think that's at 6:30. And then on Wednesday at the British Library, which is my last night here.
Whoop.
And I think that's 7 o'clock.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And do you want them to find you on Twitter?
Oh yeah, yeah. So on Twitter and Instagram, I'm just my full name, which is Yersa Daily Ward, and my first name is YRSA.
And then Daily Ward.
You're
so lucky
Ward.
You got that handle early. Like the full, you could have your full name in there. It's just branded.
But am I?
Yeah.
Am I? Because
yes,
like,
you are.
Who's going to choose that? It's really like actually, complicated. Yeah, yeah, it's your name.
Have you met another Yersa before?
There is a famous writer called, but they're like, it's a very Scandinavian name, but they're like Yersa. It's like Yersa. Yeah, yeah, and she's like really famous. It's like crime and like thriller novels.
Oh right, okay.
Yeah, she's really famous.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well, you can find us at Mostly Lit on Twitter, Mostly Lit Pod on Instagram,
yep.
mostly.lit.com.
mostly-lit.
Mostly-lit. Sorry, that's the website.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you can send us emails at mostlylit@gmail.com.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, we have our individual ads in our bio.
Yep. And don't forget that we're going to be at the Last Word Festival at Camden Roundhouse
on the 17th of June.
So grab your tickets, come down and see us live.
All info's on the website.
Yep. Cool.
So be there.
So thank you, Yersa, for coming down.
Thank you. I loved it. Yes.
Taking time out of your international tour. Can you imagine one day, like internationally, we can say, well, we're going to be, you know, in New York.
Yeah. No. You'll probably be doing that like in 2 months.
I imagine.
But, like, yeah, imagine? Most wish. Of it.
We wish.
Of course it will.
But yeah, thank you for coming.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Alright.
And we'll see you guys next week.
Catch you later.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.